This is Lawrence Tuning, and these are my 88 friends.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one-man band. I'm the number one fan. Me and my.
Welcome to another episode of our podcast, Me and My 88 Friends. This is Lawrence Tuning, your host, and this is episode 177. Earlier this week, the world was fixated on this total eclipse of the sun. I was so jealous of my friends. My son lives in Austin, Texas. It went right over Austin. Many of my friends live in Indiana. They saw it. My main friends saw it, but we only heard about it. But there were many people that were saying, well, maybe this is the end of the world. Every time that comes around, throughout history, people have wondered. Well, it wasn't the end of the world, but I want to read to you about the mother of all eclipses. And that's in Revelation chapter 6, starting with verse 12. John said, "And I saw the Lamb break open the sixth seal. There was a violent earthquake, and the sun became black like coarse black cloth, and the moon turned completely red like blood. The stars fell down to the earth like unripe figs, falling from the tree when a strong wind shakes it. The sky disappeared like a scroll being rolled up, and every mountain and island was moved from its place." Okay, that's what I call a phenomenal eclipse. Well, I thought, I got one song that has one line about an eclipse. So I want to play this. I know we played it a few weeks ago, but this song is called Kalamazoo. Sitting here beside My friend Brian Hoogenboom, who, as we say every week, is the Surgeon General who edits the podcast. Brian is also the guitar player, a guitar player, we have two, in our band Damascus Road. And we haven't played together, Brian, since November 19th. We did that concert on the life of Jesus. Then we took a break, and then the break was a lot longer than we thought because a sickness and circumstances happened. And we're going to get together in about a week. And I'm counting the days. Can't wait to get back together and start playing new songs and just being together. So I want to play a couple of Damascus Road songs. The first one I wrote, I finished in 1973. It took about 2 years to write. And it's a funny thing. I quit singing it for decades. And every now and then I would get an email. I got an email from a guy from New Hampshire or Maine, and he said, I just found your name, but I remember your name, and there was this one song. I heard it in 1973. It was called something about I'll Never Go Back. Well, the song was I Wouldn't Go Back, and it was the title song of the first album that I ever did with the Fisherman. So I want to play I Wouldn't Go Back. And then I want to play, following that one, a song we haven't played in a while, Brian, and that is Unless the Lord Builds the House. These are by Lawrence Tuning and Damascus Road.
Screaming, who are you anyway? sitting in my living room. Tears streaming down my face. Life was such a waste. Then I met you.
Thank you.
That was the band Damascus Road and yours truly doing a couple of Lorenzo songs written many years ago, I Wouldn't Go Back and Unless the Lord Builds the House. We're calling this episode Conversation in an Upper Room Part 2. And last week, this week, and next week, we're taking a good look at the last conversation Jesus had with his disciples the night before he died. And one of the things we're going to look at tonight is that Jesus announced to them, the world's going to hate you. You're not going to be popular. In fact, the world will many times even try to kill you. And you just need to get used to it. That's part of what it means to follow Jesus. I'm part of a Zoom prayer meeting, international prayer meeting, every week. And almost every week, we either hear about or actually secretly talk to people who are in great danger of imprisonment and their life. And I want to play a song I wrote a few months ago called Ishmael. And it's about a person who is facing a severe punishment because people have found out he's a believer in Jesus. His name is Ishmael, and he sits in a prison cell. Tomorrow a judge will tell what the future holds. What it holds for Ishmael. He's accused of a serious crime. He's been arrested for a second time, and time is running out. And tomorrow they will decide if he lives or if he dies. So I say a prayer tonight for Ishmael. Ishmael, they found a Bible in his home, something illegal for a person to own or to turn to Christ. Ishmael, he chose to walk the narrow path, and someone took a photograph the day he was baptized. He's been warned and he's been fined. He refuses to change his mind. So I say a prayer tonight for Ishmael. And tonight his wife will weep, and his child will find it hard to sleep. So I say a prayer tonight for Ishmael.
You got something that I, you got a heart of stone.
That's a Bob Dylan song called Property of Jesus. Here's what the chorus says. He's the property of Jesus. Resent him to the bone. You've got something better. You've got a heart of stone. Back in the late 70s or early 80s, Bob Dylan shocked the whole world when he announced that he had been baptized as a Christian. And he put out two albums of Christian music, and then this song was on the third album. The Property of Jesus, Resent Him to the Bone. We're calling this episode, again, Conversations in an Upper Room, Part 2. What we did last week and what we're going to do again this week, we're looking at the last conversation Jesus had with his disciples. That's found in the Gospel of John, chapter 13 through chapter 17. He talked about a lot of different things, and it actually started in the upper room, and they began to walk toward the garden. In fact, in the New American Standard Version, he says, "Rise, let us be going." That's where the title of my song came from, that verse, "Rise, let us be going." And so part of what he talked about, he talked outdoors on their way to the garden. But there's two things I want to pick up on what he said that is very important. And the first thing he said was, the world's going to hate you. He said, I didn't tell you this before now, although he did mention it in a few places, but he said, the world is going to hate you. And I didn't tell you till now because I was with you. But now that I'm going away, you need to brace up to the fact that you're not going to be well-liked. You're going to be unpopular. That's a pretty tough message in today's world. I think a lot of people want to popularize Christianity, and I got news for you. It's never, ever going to happen. Let me just read you some of the things Jesus said. I'm reading in the Good News Version, which came out when I was in high school, I believe. This is John chapter 15, starting with verse 18. Jesus said, if the world hates you, just remember it has hated me first. If you belong to the world, then the world would love you as its own. But I chose you from this world, and you do not belong to it. That is why the world hates you. Remember what I told you. Slaves are not greater than their master. If people persecuted me, they will persecute you too. If they obeyed my teaching, they will obey yours too. But they will do all this to you because you are mine, for they do not know the one who sent me. They would not have been guilty of sin if I had not come and spoken to them. As it is, they no longer have any excuse for their sin. Whoever hates me hates my Father also. They would not have been guilty of sin if I had not done among them the things that no one else ever did. As it is, they have seen what I did, and they hate both me and my Father. This, however, was bound to happen, so that what is written in their law may come true. They hated me for no reason at all. The Helper will come. We talked about that last week. The Spirit who reveals the truth about God and who comes from the Father. I will send him to you from the Father, and he will speak about me. And you too will speak about me, because you have been with me from the very beginning. I have told you this so that you will not give up your faith. You will be expelled from the synagogues, and the time will come when those who kill you will think that by doing this they are serving God. People will do these things to you because they have not known either the Father or me. But I have told you this so that when the time comes for them to do these things, you will remember what I told you. So, that was a rather shocking thing for Jesus to tell them the night before he died. You're going to be hated. I want you to go all over the world, but remember, you're going to win people to me, but you're not going to win everybody to me, and by and large, you're going to be hated by the world system. And he said, this is going to happen because you are not one of them anymore. You have not bought in. You don't buy into their philosophy anymore. Now, when he says world, he's not talking about the earth. He's talking about a Greek word called cosmos, which means the world system. the world system controlled by the evil one, the world system that wants to serve themselves and has no desire to bow the knee to God. And he says that system is going to not like you, and they're even going to persecute you. They're going to kill you. And that's happening all over the world even now. And I think many times Christians long so much to be received and to be welcomed and to look cool and to not be something that the world sneers at, but that's part of the package. We had a guest on this show in the early episodes, a friend of mine here in town, a pastor named Lonnie Curl. Lonnie had a real drug problem when he was a young man, and he's about to celebrate his 50th anniversary as a born-again Christian. But there was a house here in Florence, South Carolina, which was the equivalent of what we would call nowadays a crack house. They didn't call it that then. It was in a very nice part of town, and nobody knew. But he hung out there. He did a lot of drugs there. And that house had a big, long hallway with a lot of rooms in it, a lot of bedrooms. He told me that the day after he came to Christ, and he didn't know how they found out, but he went back to that crack house to tell people what had happened. And when he walked in the door, they all went running to different rooms and locked the doors. And he went to one of his close friend's room and said, "Let me in." He said, "No, Lonnie, you can't come in. You don't belong here anymore. You don't belong to us anymore." And it was very hurtful to him. But he learned firsthand what Jesus was talking about. I heard the story one time about an evangelist preaching at a church. And when he gave the traditional altar call for people to come forward to receive Christ, he had the whole church turn around and face the back door. And then he asked those who wanted to follow Christ to turn around and come to the front of the church. And he said, "I'm doing this because for the rest of your life, you're going to be swimming upstream. You're going to be going against the grain. You're going to be going against the flow of the world." So that's just a fact of life. I worked as an adoption worker for many years, and I shared an office with a Jehovah Witness who I really loved. She was a fine lady, and we didn't agree theologically at all. But the one thing I respected about her is that her faith taught her, you're going to be rejected. You're going to go out there, so don't think you're going to be popular. And as unpopular as this sounds, we need to talk about this because Jesus said it was going to happen. The world's not going to love us. I'm going to give you four reasons why the world is never going to be happy with biblical Christians. Now, a lot of people claim to be Christians, but I'm talking about if you really act it out and radically follow Jesus. Here's four reasons why they're not going to like you. First of all, Christians teach Jesus is the way, not a way, not one of many ways. He is the way to God, the way, the one-way street. That's not popular with the world, but Jesus said, no one comes to the Father except by me. He also taught about the good shepherd. And he said, the shepherds that come in to the flock any other way than the door, which is Jesus, are pretenders. They're false. They're robbers and thieves. The apostles taught that salvation comes through no other name. The Bible is clear that the true way is Jesus. And the world hates that. That's intolerant. That's bigoted in the eyes of the world. Number two, Jesus teaches there is sin and that people are to repent and turn away from sin. There are absolutes. There are things that the Bible says are sins. And the Bible says the only way to deal with that is to reject them, to reject the sins and walk away. And the world doesn't like that. We're living in a world that doesn't like rules, that doesn't like limits, and feels like you are your own God. There are many people deconstructing their faith because they don't like that idea that I have to obey another power. Another thing, boy, this is really tough. You didn't expect this, but Christians believe in hell. Wow, why'd you say that? Well, because Jesus talked about it a lot. We don't think everybody are IPs. We should talk about Bob Dylan because we just heard him sing. I went to his concert in 1980, I think it was, at the Worcester Auditorium in Worcester, Massachusetts. And he was really on fire with his face. And I'll never forget, he went up to the microphone. I can't talk like him, but I'm going to give a poor imitation. He says, you know, everybody, people say they don't believe in hell. Well, I didn't believe in New York City either till I went there. That was a poor impersonation. But here's the other thing. Christians are told to go and proselytize the whole world. And the world says, no, 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 you don't do that. You tolerate, you embrace. But Jesus said, I want you to go into all the world and preach the gospel and win converts. And for those four, there are a lot more reasons than that, but for those reasons alone, we'll never be popular. So get used to it. The world's not going to put their arms around you and say you're wonderful because you follow Jesus.
They look at me and frown. They like to drive me from this town. They don't want me around. Cause I believe in you.
Well, I've gotten my Bob Dylan fix for the night. Think I'll pull out my CDs and hear the whole things. Brian, let's play Rise, Let Us Be Going, because that was the sentence Jesus gave when he left the upper room and began walking toward the garden.
just be going, going. Rise, let us be going, going. It's time to arise, let us be going, going, going.
Somewhere evidently between the upper room and the Garden of Gethsemane, they stopped by a grapevine, and Jesus began to compare his followers to the branches on a grapevine. Now, I have a grapevine. It's an arbor. It's a grape arbor. The most wonderful grapes in the world are these southern grapes. They're brownish, called scuppernons. And I had one growing up, and my wife said, we'll get you one for nostalgia's sake. The problem is, last year, this big vine, you can walk under it and everything, produced, I think, at tops, 19, maybe 20 grapes. It looked great. It was lush, but no grapes. And what Jesus said about growing grapes applied in my life. And this is what he said. John 15, starting with verse 1. I am the real vine, and my Father is the gardener. He breaks off every branch in me that does not bear fruit, and he prunes every branch that does bear fruit so that it will be clean and bear more fruit. You have been made clean already by the teaching I have given you. Okay, what I had to do a few weeks ago, in hopes that I will have a better crop next year, I had to go out there and cut out all the branches that were dead. There's all sorts of little sticks and branches that are dead. They're just there. They're not doing anything but just sitting there. And what the problem is, they're blocking the sunlight from getting in there and causing the grapes to really grow. So I had to get rid of that. And then I had to get these clippers and prune them back. And what you do when you prune grapes or blackberries or whatever, they have these notches on them, and you prune it back to about the two closest to the vine, like two little notches. And you really cut it back. And sometimes you think, I'm killing the thing. But you do that because it's when you prune it, then you produce a lot more grapes. So I've tried it. I'm going to try to do it and see if this works for next summer. But that's what Jesus said. He said, my Father is like the gardener. I'm like the vine, and people are like the branches on the grapevine. And he said, the ones that don't bear any fruit, the Father breaks off and lays them aside. Some of them that aren't bearing fruit, but lays them aside, they dry up and they burn them, which we did. We have I shouldn't say it on the air, but we have a little barrel in the backyard, and we burn sticks in it. That's a very old Southern redneck way of trash removal. Get an old barrel and burn things in it. But you bring it way back, and then hopefully we're going to see a lot of grapes. And so Jesus said that's like people. The people who are bearing fruit will need to be pruned. I always thought that meant they're going to go through hard times. Okay, we're going to go through a tough time because we need to be pruned. God's pruning me. He's cutting me back. But Jesus made it clear. He said it was his word. He said, you have already become clean by the words that I've spoken to you. So it's really the word. As you read the word, as you read the Bible, and you begin to see areas in your life that need dealt with, you cut back, you purge things. My daughter purges her clothes every year, you know, gets rid of stuff that she hasn't worn. And I try to do it one year, and it's true. If I haven't worn a shirt in the last 4 years, chances are I'm not going to wear it this year. So you bring it back so you can bear more fruit. And then Jesus said, and this is what I want to really zero in. He said, I am the vine, you are the branches. Those who remain in me and I in them will bear much fruit, for you can do nothing without me. Those who do not remain in me are thrown out like a branch and dry up. Such branches are gathered up and thrown into the fire where they are burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, then you will ask for anything you wish and you shall have it. My Father's glory is shown by your bearing much fruit, and in this way you become my disciples. Okay, two things I want to just point out, I want to ask. What does it mean to remain? And what does it mean to bear fruit as far as the kingdom, Jesus' kingdom? That word remain is a funny word. It's a Greek word. And it's translated at various points. Stay, remain, abide, dwell. It has the connotation of staying fixed, staying in one place, not being moved. The Bible says, be steadfast and immovable. And what he's saying is, stay in me, remain in me. And as I've thought about it, I'd like to think, stay connected to me. That's really what he's saying. The branch has got to stay connected to the vine, because it can't produce anything unless it's connected, unless it's staying and it's remaining in the vine. You cut it off, it's going to die. And so he's talking about staying connected. My dad used to own a furniture store, and he sold TVs back when they first came out. And so a guy bought a TV, and he said, you got to bring the repairman out. It's not working. You said it would work, and it's not working. So they arranged for a repairman to go out, and he tried everything in the world in the TV. And finally, he stopped and said, it's not plugged in. That's your problem. It's not going to work unless it stays plugged in. And that's what Jesus is saying. You've got to stay plugged into him, plugged into his word, plugged into his will, plugged into him. I had a guy tell me years ago, he said, you know, you used to get on my nerves so bad, because every time we would talk, you'd always bring it back to Jesus. And you were just the Jesus man. Everything was Jesus. Well, that's what it's got to be. He says, I want you to remain in me, stay fixed in me, stay close to me, and you will bear fruit. Okay? Dead branches can't bear fruit. But what does it mean to bear fruit? Well, it means basically to be an influencer for Jesus. Now, there are two kinds of people that approach Jesus. One is the kind that likes to add him on sort of as an ornament to his or her life. We'll go to church, we'll give him lip service, but we're still in control, and he's just part of our life. But then there's the other type that have been radically moved by this love that Jesus gives, and so they just want to go out and influence others to follow him. Bearing fruit can mean winning people to him, or it can mean just shining your light in a dark place. But Jesus said, I want you to go and bear fruit. And the way you do it is you've got to stay plugged in. You've got to stay connected to the vine, if you're the branch. He said, abide in my love. Abide in my words. Abide in me. Now, there's a verse in the Old Testament that uses the word abide. And remember, abide means this whole thing of connected, staying, stay fixed. There's an old hymn called Abide With Me. But there's a verse in the Old Testament that says, heaven and earth may pass away, but my word abideth forever. My word abideth forever. Well, my cousin went to a funeral way out in the country. And the preacher, I didn't think he had a PhD by any means, but he said, in his own words, he said, remember, God says, heaven and earth may pass away, but my word ain't going nowhere. That's his way of saying, my word abideth forever. My word ain't going nowhere. And Jesus is saying that to you and me. If you want to bear fruit, settle in your mind, you're not going anywhere. You're going to stay with him. I heard a story, and I'm going to kind of end on this, Brian. This is a true story. There was a man who wrote hymns named Paul Rader. He wrote the famous song, Only Believe. Only believe. All things are possible. Only believe. Well, when he was a little boy, he lived in Denver, Colorado. And D.L. Moody, who was sort of like the Billy Graham of that day, he was a world-famous, great evangelist. Moody Bible Institute is named after him. He preached all over the world and was a great storyteller. And so this little boy had always heard about him, and he heard he was coming to Denver. So the boy walked blocks and blocks and blocks and blocks all by himself. He was about 7 or 8 years old. And when he got to the auditorium, the usher said, I'm sorry, we've reached our full capacity with the fire marshal. You can't come in. Nobody else can come in. And the little boy was so disappointed, and he tried hard not to cry. This was Paul Rader I'm talking about. And a man walked by, and he said, what's the matter? Why are you crying, son? And he told the whole story. I walked all this way to see D.L. Moody, and now I can't see him, and I've had my heart set on it, and they won't let me in. And the man said to him, true story, he said, I'll get you in. He said, I don't know how. They told me I can't come in. He said, I will get you in. Here's what you do. I want you to grab my coattail. Just grab my coattail by your hand, and anywhere I go. You walk with me, and I'll get you there. And so they walked in the auditorium, and the little boy held on to that man's coattail, and they walked all down these long aisles and steps, and then they got to the front of the auditorium, packed full, and they walked up some steps and got on the main stage, and the man turned to him and said, I'm D.L. Moody, and I'm so glad you came to hear me tonight. The point of that story is, I'm going to grab Jesus' coattail, and I'm going to do just like that little boy. I'm going to hang on to him. Wherever he goes, I want to go. Whatever he says to do, I want to do. And that's the way we'll bear fruit, and that's the way we'll ultimately get to heaven and live forever with him. It's a wonderful thing to abide and to stay connected to Jesus. Now, I want to close with a song I wrote after a very disappointing experience in my life. There was a time in my life, I'm old now, Brian, I'll be 75 next month, but in my young years, I met a few famous people, and these people really encouraged me. They said, your songs are going to be heard all over the place. You're going to make records and all of this. And I swallowed it. I believed them. But people like Andre Crouch and later the Grammy winner Gary S. Paxton, both of them tried to get a record deal and a songwriting deal for me. And both times it fell through because of circumstances or this and that. And that was a great disappointment to me. And there came a point where reality began to set in, the hard, cold reality that I probably would not have a record contract and probably would not be well known, and there probably wouldn't be millions buying my records. And so what do you do when you come to that realization? Well, you can get mad at God. You can feel sorry for yourself. You can get jealous of other people that got the big break and you didn't. Or you can do what I came to decide was the best course. And that was to say, okay, I will bloom where I'm planted. I will bear some fruit right here. It doesn't have to be the big time. It doesn't have to be fame. But we can do something that Jesus told his disciples, leave the lady alone who poured the perfume over my head. She did what she could. And so I can do what I can. And so because of this little song came, and I just sat down at the piano. It's really not a, it's just me and my 88 friends. It's just me and the piano. But I want to sing it as we close. It's called We Can Bear Some Fruit Right Here.
Oh, we never made the big time, and our name is not a household word by now. And the Grammys go to someone else. No one even knows that we exist. Though we never got that big break or the silver bus to take us to success. But I feel at peace within nonetheless. And I feel that we can bear some fruit right here. It may be small, but when God calls, I will know I've done my share. I just want to hear him say, well done, my faithful one, when at last he shall appear. And I feel that we can bear some fruit right here. Reaching ones and twos instead of thousands in the world's great concert halls. We're not gospel stars, we're just who we are. What we share is what we know is true. We may never a satellite to televise us daily, far and near. Oh, but I feel that we can bear some fruit right here. And I feel that we can bear some fruit right here. Small, but when God calls, I will know I've done my share. Oh, I just want to hear him say, well done, you're my faithful one, when at last he shall appear. And I feel we can bear some fruit right. I've done my share. I just want to hear him say, well done, you're my faithful one, when at last he shall appear. And I feel that we can bear some fruit right here. I feel that we can bear some fruit right here.
That's our show for tonight. I'm sure thankful John wrote down all these conversations Jesus had with them the night before he died. So they used to say, bloom where you're planted, just bear some fruit wherever you are, and let everybody know how great it is to know and love Jesus. Thanks for listening. God bless.
My 88 friends, I will see.